So today I want to talk about our mission, Zen Center's mission. And last week, Ted talked about our values. So our mission. Organizations have missions, right? All organizations have a mission that is kind of at the heart of what they're trying to do. And nonprofits, mission doesn't relate to money, although you have to have enough money to stay alive. But our mission is, I wrote this mission statement probably, 12, 13 years ago, and the board just approved it. Our mission is to help people experience a deep and quiet joy, a joy that arises whenever we are fully engaged in the work or play of this moment. So deep and quiet. Still waters run deep. And our practices, practice of stillness, practice of being still so that we can experience that stillness. And that we can experience that as an inner spring that's available to us at all times. I mean, that's the goal. Available to us at all times. The more we drink from this spring with our meditation practice, the more we settle into our own happiness. Our own happiness. As well as relishing other people's happiness. Not saying, you know, relishing others. So my promise to you is that if you do this practice over and over, that you will know this, you will live this, you will be this. And in Buddhism, there are far enemies of joy, and there are near enemies of joy. The far enemies of joy are jealousy, or envy, and greed. Why does Ted have all this joy? Why is he laughing so much? How about me? How about me? Right? Jealousy, envy, and greed. Cut out the laughter. Or give me half of it at least. Right? That's the far enemy of joy. The near enemy of joy is exhilaration. So taking my 9 and 12-year-old grandkids to Valley Fair, and it's their exhilaration, one ride after another. Oh, this ride, Grandpa. Oh, this ride, Grandpa. Well, let's just settle down for a minute. We just did one ride. No, this ride, Grandpa. I have to get through all the rides today, Grandpa. Grandpa's going, right? Exhilaration. And with a 9 and a 12-year-old, that's fine. But most of us are trying to be post-adolescent. And these guys are, right? We're trying to be post-9 and 12. So notice when you're caught by exhilaration. Usually, when we're caught by exhilaration, it's because of some insufficiency or lack inside of us. And we're, something more, something more, something more, something more. So, I'd like to suggest there are 3 levels of joy. The first is joy which is evoked by a situation. By a situation. A moment when you're with a child that is really being sweet. Or a dog that is really being sweet. I have a friend who likes to walk around the lake with me, and every time we see a sweet dog, she has to stop. It's a moment of exhilaration for her. Not so much for me, but for her. A little bit for me, depending on the dog. It's joy evoked by a situation. We finish a challenging workout. Oh, we take a pleasant walk along the lake. Oh, it's natural to savor that. We all like to savor that kind of thing. And that's good. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And what gets in the way is our thoughts about the past or the future, sometimes diluting that situational joy. Our worrying that others are jealous of us for having this joy. Oh. Our wanting to hang on to this joy. I just want to stay with this dog. This dog is so sweet. This dog makes me forget everything and just be present. I want to take this dog home with me, this dog I met at the lake, or whatever, or whatever. So I had a friend and student, whom I'll call Mike, who was uncomfortable with joyful feelings. They made him feel too vulnerable. Being present for him made him feel too vulnerable. He had a secret fear that if he acknowledged his joy, suffering would worsen. He'd gotten this attitude, he realized, from his mother, who had fundamental distrust from her own childhood, passing it along, karmically passing it along. So it was hard for him. But he worked for it, he worked with it, he practiced it for a while, and things improved. He was able to be with his joyful feelings without doing anything, just being with them. Just being with them. Because as soon as you try to do something about them, they go away. Or with them, or to them, they go away. Let's say you get a compliment for something that you've done. Can you just bask in the glow? Can you just acknowledge the work you did to earn it? And the good fortune, without saying, I didn't deserve it? Or how long will this last? Or can you do that? That's possible, isn't it? Possible through our meditation practice. And as you enjoy the feeling of the compliment that Jeff just gave me, acknowledge that all conditions change. And the good feeling I'm having now might change. And Jeff might change. Next time he might be on my case about not being political enough or not caring about the disenfranchised enough. That won't feel so joyful. Oh, that's okay. I can still savor it. I can still savor it. So I just went to a friend's party who retired as a CEO of a nonprofit that helped kids. In lots and lots of different ways it helped kids. And so at a retirement party, as at lots of retirement parties, people got up and talked about him. Oh, he did this to help autistic kids. He did this to help developmentally disabled kids. He did this to help kids in their homes. Everybody, that's what happens at retirement parties. But this was really almost over the top, although it was sincere. So then he got up to speak, and he said, yeah, I did all these things. Everybody laughed. Why did everybody laugh? Because it's impolite to just savor compliments, to just savor the moment. But is that really impolite? I mean, they laughed because it was so odd for him to do that, and yet they loved him. And then he paused, and then he said, but I did it. Working with all of you. I couldn't have done it without you. We can't do anything without others, can we? And he's a long-term meditator, my friend. Not in our tradition, but it doesn't matter what tradition you're in. The second level of joy. A little deeper. No longer caught in the loop of being upset about not getting what we want and getting what we don't want. Right? Not getting what we want. The poison, one of the three poisons that I've talked about a lot in Buddhism. Not getting what we want. Hatred. I mean, excuse me, greed. Greed. Great. Not getting what we want. I want Jeff's continual adulation, even if I'm completely apolitical. Oh, I'm not getting what I want. Not getting what I want. And, or getting what we don't want. Getting what we don't want. Hatred, the second poison. So that loop of being upset about not getting what we want and getting what we don't want, those two poisons, they interfere with our ability just to experience this joy that's here. But in the second level, we encounter an unpleasant person or a frustrating situation, and we aren't overwhelmed. We get a piece of bad news, and we continue to feel good. It conditions the moment, the bad news, but it doesn't define us. So when my friend Nathan, which is not his real name, found out he could no longer drive due to blindness in one eye, he didn't lose his strong self sense of well-being. It was still there. He was a long-term meditator. Didn't lose it. He was no longer dominated by the joy which comes only from getting what he wanted. He was no longer dominated from that. And you too, as you sink into this practice, will experience that. And maybe you already have. Maybe it's just been fleeting. But fleeting is okay. Fleeting is actually timeless. Maybe you were getting your car repaired. I think I used this one recently, but I'm using it again. And you thought it was going to cost you $200, and you went to the shop and it's $2,000. additional zero makes a big difference, right? But you're still in good spirits. You're still in good spirits. If you're still in good spirits, notice in your belly, you probably feel relaxed. Your breathing is probably free-flowing and unconstricted. I mean, etymologically, spirit and breath are the same. You know, you guys, some of you know that from Latin, they're the same. Spirit, good breath. Bad spirit, bad breath. So you're breathing free-flowing and unconstricted, which comes out of your meditation practice. Of course, in your meditation practice, you can't force it, but gradually it comes on its own. Gradually it comes. And then you even feel friendly to the mechanic. I mean, it doesn't mean you don't want a challenge. Well, explain to me exactly what happens. He explains it to you. It all makes sense. It's not his fault. It's the car's fault. You'll blame the car. Bang on the car. But you don't lose your good feeling. You don't lose good feeling. So when we have this good feeling, can we notice whether we're clinging to or identifying with the centeredness? Can we observe whether our ego is starting to hijack our experiences by saying, I want more? I want more, which is one of the poisons. Now the third, the lowest level, that's what, or the highest, whatever you want to say, the deepest level. Everybody wants the deepest level, right? Deepest level. Unconditioned joy. Paramudita in Sanskrit. Unconditioned joy. A deep and quiet joy, not caught by an eye that is separate, nor is the feeling of well-being just localized. Boundaryless. As I was saying in my last talk, you are large, you contain multitudes. And I suggested a couple of people say that to themselves when they're angry. I am more than my anger. When they're sad, I'm more than my sadness. So that's fundamental Buddhist teaching, that you are more, that you are more. And that helps you sink into this unconditioned. And we need to be careful not to idealize this third kind of joy and strive to be something that we haven't experienced. We have to spend some time in the water. first on the surface and then gradually going deeper. Even though ego always wants to be present at its own funeral, as I've said before. Before we deepen our meditation, if one thing is amiss, we don't experience deep joy. We don't experience it. We're derailed by even the slightest disagreement or criticism. But over time, through this process of with persistence and patience, we can do it. We can do it. We can because it's here. It's a reservoir right here. Right here at the center of being. Wow. We're lucky. Here it is at the center of being. Wow. We're lucky. So I call this turtle practice. And the turtle just takes one step and then another step. But often it feels like its steps are backwards, but it just keeps taking them. And then sometimes it has to go inside the shell. Go inside your meditation. Just stop everything. Don't try to do anything. Just go inside your shell until you're ready to take another step. Then we can feel the presence of this deep reservoir called sometimes Buddha nature. Even when there is an absence of circumstantial joy. Even when it's absent. It's here. It's here. Sometimes I refer to this as going into Bodhidharma's cave. Going to Bodhidharma's cave and blowing out the candle. Blowing out the candle on the altar. Blowing it out. Nothing holy about it. Blowing it out. And there in the cave, all beings are supporting you. Wow. Wow. Because you're more than this fear of the dark, of the unknown. You're large, again, Walt Whitman. You contain multitudes. So to help people experience a deep and quiet joy, a joy that arises whenever we are fully engaged in the work or play of this moment. So we're on a path. Those of us who are practitioners are on a path toward transformation, sometimes called the Eightfold Path, through dukkha, through suffering, to happiness, to deep joy, which is a synonym for happiness in Buddhist teaching. And we have an aspiration. We climb toward wisdom. We climb toward awakening. We climb toward fulfillment or some other pinnacle. Let's say you want to master Zen in the formal way, the traditional Japanese way. Well, first you hang out. Let's say you're going to do it here. First you hang out for a while, then you get initiated. Maybe that'll be the pinnacle. I'm going to get initiated. You soul, your Roksu, and you get initiated. Huh, it wasn't the pinnacle after all. Where's that pinnacle? Oh, maybe you'll be ordained. You'll talk to one of the teachers about being ordained as a priest. You'll sew a big robe and you'll get ordained and you'll be a priest here. Maybe that's going to be the pinnacle. You do that. You get the ceremony. Oh, it's not the pinnacle. Oh, then you're here playing as a priest in training for X number of years. Till finally the teacher says, oh, you're completed. You've completed this. Now, there's a ceremony, you become an independent teacher. Oh, maybe that's the pinnacle. But it doesn't feel like the pinnacle. This is the way human life goes. I'm just using Zen Center as an example. We're always looking for a pinnacle later on. You know, high school was a drag, and I remember going through my course work my first year of college. Oh, I got to take all these neat courses. Wow. Wow. Excited. First day of school, not quite so excited. Midterms, much less. This is not the pinnacle. Not the pinnacle. This is the something else. The bottom. The bottom. Always looking for the pinnacle. A career, oh, this is going to be the pinnacle. It wasn't the pinnacle. Maybe my new relationship will be the pinnacle. Oh, it doesn't quite. We're having arguments. It seemed like fine for a while, but now it's not the pinnacle. Maybe we should have kids. Having kids. Oh, the baby's born. I'm present at childbirth. And wow. Wow. Looks like that's going to be the pinnacle till we have to take the kid home. Speaking as a father and a grandfather. Oh, well, the pinnacle. Maybe it's going to be when they graduate from high school and they're no longer adolescents. Maybe that's going to be the pinnacle. Right? Where's that pinnacle? Where's that pinnacle? What? And my life is, you know, 75 years old. I am actually 75 years old. Where was that pinnacle? Did I miss it? It's always in the future, always out of reach. Simon and Garfunkel, slip sliding away, slip sliding away. You know, the nearer your destinations, the more you're slip sliding away. Anybody experience that? So that's a path that we're on. It's a Buddhist path. It's Buddhism. And often it's frustrating because in the future, we want something. We're human beings, and it's frustrating. So that's why Suzuki Roshi, my teacher, my root teacher, said to us, don't do stepladder Zen, which really puzzled me because he was getting ready to do initiation of a bunch of people. He ordained others as priests, and it just puzzled me. But we can look at Buddhism as a path. It is a path. And we can also look at Zen as a dot. And we're practicing Zen Buddhism. We're practicing Zen Buddhism. In the dot, there's no before and after. It's just this. Everything's included. Past, present, future, fantasy, anger, sadness, bliss. In this dot, just this. Now. So where's the pinnacle? Right now. Right now. Listening to me talk, or being bored by me talk, or looking at your watch while I'm talking. That's the pinnacle. The dot. The dot. That's Zen. The dot reminds us to focus on what we enjoy, and not on moving up to something else. Just being here. Just being here. Feeling the wind in our hair. It was hot yesterday. And it's hot again today, but there was just enough wind when I was down by the lake to feel the refreshing wind in my hair. Watching the moon rise, basking in the sun, playing in the lake, as I've been doing with my grandkids, quacking with the ducks. My grandkids used to like to do that, but now when I do that, they think I'm weird. So I'm looking for more little kids to play with. Anybody have any little kids for me? So are you on a path or a dot? If you're human, fully human, both. Zen Buddhism. Balance. Balance. Living in the now, but more than that. Because if we just live in the now, we walk around doing just what we feel like all the time. We kind of screw things up often. And also our heart. All of us in our heart yearns for some sense of direction. There's something that our heart wants to express, wants to be in the future. It yearns for that. So maybe we can say a winding trail that I'm walking on as a series of dots. Well, how about that? And as I've often said, there's only a dim vision about where. That's good, because if we have a very concrete, specific vision, we'll forget the dot part and we'll just be going for it. But if it's dim enough, then we're really with the dot, really with the now. But we still have the vision. We still have the heart still yearns for something in the future, wants to create something or be something or something like that. So enjoying life doesn't mean forgetting our responsibilities. At the same time, each moment we can embrace fully, and that can be the pinnacle. Is it possible to act from the deepest part of our being every moment and just stay true to our purpose? Not always, but little by little we can do that. And if we feel like we don't have a purpose and we don't know where we're going, then check in with what you most deeply care about in your heart of hearts, what you most deeply care about. So the mission statement again, to help people experience a quiet and deep joy, a deep and quiet joy, a joy that arises whenever we are fully engaged in the work or the play of this moment. So full engagement in our Zen is called Shikan. It means just to. Just to sit in meditation, just to go for a walk, just to cook a meal, just to do the dishes, just to talk with a friend. Just to. Full engagement. Full engagement. And when there's full engagement, it's a dot. But you're also on a path to doing something. Like, in the garden, for instance, there's John. So, John, I don't know if Pat's here, but Pat here too? Oh, John, hi Pat, I don't see you in there. Oh, okay. So, John, so if you go in the garden in the backyard now, wow, it used to be overgrown, kind of sloppy. No, it's just beautiful. When I go there, I don't even want to come in the Zendo. I just want to stay out there and do walking meditation all day. So that's Shikan. Just to take care of something. Just to take care of something. And when you take care of something, the something that you take care of takes care of you. Wow. Wow. When you walk through that garden, you feel something. You feel taken care of by it. By the trail, by the plants, by the lawn. It's taking care of you. Shikan. Full engagement. Reciprocal. Reciprocal. Always reciprocal if it's full engagement. Whether it's deep or shallow, the joy, it doesn't matter. Full engagement. Fully engaged in the work or play of this moment. Is your work just work? Or can it be more playful? Can it be more playful? Play is intrinsically motivated. It's the dot, right? It's intrinsically motivated. And we may have ends on the path, but it's the process that we value. It's the taking care of the garden. One root at a time, to dig out those weeds, one root at a time, and to create something on a path, but doing it fully, with full engagement, not split. And then the soil is your teacher. It gives you the wordless teaching. So when I was a young man, we lived in northern Minnesota, and we had 40 acres of land, and we were trying to be self-sustaining, which was probably a little naive, but we had that aspiration to be self-sustaining. And we had 8 goats that we milked twice a day after our meditation, and we had a great big garden. But it was hard. And the soil in the part of northern Minnesota we were in was clay soil. And my friend used to say, well, we should have become potters instead of farmers. We would have done better at that. But, you know, we just worked it. We just loved being out there. We just loved giving ourselves to it. And it gave back. But it took a long time. It took like 2 years to even make that soil so that it wanted to have things grow in it. But it also took a short time because we just did it and then did it and then did it. And it was a short time, but it was a long time. So play is intrinsically motivated. And little kids know how to play. My grandsons used to know how to play intrinsically. Just play. Like my grandsons used to. We'd go to the beach and they'd make sandcastles. And if the sandcastle got washed away, they didn't care. They just were into making the sandcastle. They were just doing dot practice. Little kids know how to do dot practice really well. We have to make more effort ourselves, right? Because we get caught on our path. Now if waves come or other kids come around to mess with their sandcastles, they get really pissed. But they had that beginner's mind then. That beginner's mind. Activities themselves are the pleasure. Suzuki Roshi, my teacher, in the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. In the expert's mind, there are few, which I talked about last time. And I suggested a second mantra last time, that when you're feeling angry or sad or upset, just say, I'm starting over. Just say, I'm starting over. Just start over. You can always make another sandcastle. It's the process of making the sandcastle that's wonderful. Just start over. Just start over. And work is to produce some valued end. There's extrinsic motivation in work, but we don't want to neglect the intrinsic, the dot part of it. They're not mutually exclusive. We need both of them. So, as a number of you know, we're going to do a capital campaign here at Zen Center. Ted and Rebecca are going to lead it, but we're all going to pitch in. Because we want to take care of this building is old and beautiful, and people thought we should move and sell it, but the sentiment is because actually it's so difficult to take care of. It's an old house, and the stucco is falling off, and you know, are all kinds of systemic problems, but we have this chance to be here by the lake with this wonderful backyard. So we decided to stay, that we're going to stay, but we have to take care of it. It's going to cost a lot of money to really take care of it, to make the Zendo even more inviting and to have more classroom space and to care of it, of the exterior and the interior. So that's extrinsic. That's something outside. We'll start a path to raise the money to do that. That'll be a path. But let's not forget the dot part of it. We're only doing it. We need to remember this. And it's very important. I actually used to have to fundraise from my other nonprofit. And I knew that when I asked people for money, I would get nervous and feel like I wasn't really being a bodhisattva unless I remembered what was inside, that I was doing it because I wanted to create crisis residences for people with mental illness instead of them having to be locked up in the hospital. If I remembered that, then the extrinsic and the intrinsic weren't two. So if we remember that, then the extrinsic and the intrinsic do not have to be two. They aren't two. Anyway, they aren't two. So to help people, our mission is to help people experience a deep and quiet joy, a joy that arises whenever we are fully engaged in the work or play of this moment. Now, this mission statement actually should be a little shorter because I shouldn't have to read it. I guess I got verbose 12 or 13 years ago. I was trying to fit everything in. That's what I came up with. So I want to stop with a quote from, let's see, who is this from? I can't remember. Oh, Mark Twain. Sing like no one's listening, love like you've never been hurt, dance like nobody's watching, and live like it's heaven on earth. So that's what I want to say for this morning. And I'll be glad to entertain questions or comments. From anyone, but preferably from people who maybe haven't asked a question or made a comment in a while. Gary.
Do you think Buddha mind means having an emotional invulnerability, not being vulnerable? And that is, you can engage things without feeling the pain of it.
So he wants to, so could you guys hear him? He said, do I think the Buddha mind includes some emotional, lack of emotional vulnerability so that you can feel the, you can feel the, what did you say? You can feel the experience without feeling, getting pain, being pained by it. Is that right? No. No. The Buddha mind is just the regular mind. It feels sad and angry and vulnerable and hurt sometimes, but it doesn't perseverate. That's a great big word, right, for just going over and over. It just lets it come in and pass through. But, yeah, I think it's just regular emotions, but they don't get all stuck in us. They don't glue. They just pass through.
Isn't that invulnerability?
Oh, he says, isn't that invulnerability? Oh, well, you could say that's invulnerability, but as soon as you say that's invulnerability, then you often, maybe not you, often you close off and you say, I want to be invulnerable like Tim. But actually, I'm more vulnerable than I used to be because I have less stuff here clogging my heart mind up. But you could say maybe I'm also more invulnerable too because it just, I let it pass through. But you could say, I let it pass through. I don't let it pass through. It just I passes through. I mean, who lets it? Well, I don't know who lets it. It just passes through. Everything's passing through anyway, you know, all the time. That's all life is, stuff passing through. So invulnerable, vulnerable. I get your point, Gary, but I just choose a little different semantic path. Thank you. Any other people? Well, I am just going to sit here quietly, and we can all sit together and see who else has something to ask or bring up. Larry.
When you spoke about acceleration earlier,
yeah.
The way you express it, acceleration is not desirable, I guess, in terms of...
Well, I don't think it's indesirable. I think we get exhilarated. I think that's fine. I was just talking about how when we're trying to get exhilarated and we're dependent on exhilaration, it becomes kind of addictive and we can't really settle into our natural joy.
So what would you say is the difference between exhilaration and just natural joy? It's just a matter of degree?
Well, exhilaration, we're at least exhilaration, I know it, we're revving up our systems to feel good. Or our systems are getting revved up. And that's fine to get revved up to feel good. But this quiet joy, it can include exhilaration, but it's not necessarily revved up at all. It's just still waters run deep, deep. Does that make sense?
Sort of.
Okay. Well, sort of is good enough. Be with that dot. Be with that sort of dot. Yeah, Tanya.
My personal experiences with exhilaration, I have listened to that word quite closely today because that's a problem I've been really having a lot recently. And I know it quite well because I'll come home from work, I know I'm tired, but I want to work on something home project related, and I find myself staying up until midnight knowing that exactly what I don't. For me personally, exhilaration is very highly tied with adrenaline. And you get this physical shot of adrenaline. It won't let you take care of your physical needs.
Yeah. Good. Thank you. Thank you. Good example. I'll use that when I give this talk again on Tuesday. That's better than my example. Of course, I'll probably forget it, so I won't use it. But I'll try to remember it. stuff is passing through more rapidly than it used to. Less retention going on. This is something I just have to be with. Yeah.
I was wondering when you wrote the mission statement, from all the things that were available to you, you chose joy, the deep joy. Why did you think that that's the thing that has to be?
So when I wrote the mission statement, why did I think that deep joy is the center of our practice? Because that's how I feel. That's how I feel. I don't know. That's how I feel. Yeah. That there is a deep joy inside me and you that we can tap into when we just, the static that dominates our consciousness just sort of subsides somewhat. And that deep joy is unconditional. I feel awful about climate change. I feel awful about the fact that we're not doing well with minorities and immigration. But that doesn't inhibit the great deep joy that's here, the center of being. I felt that way, so I wrote the mission statement. That's the advantage of being the guiding teacher. You just, now I'm going to have a co-guiding teacher soon, and that's going to be a little harder. We'll have to work on the mission statement together. Yeah.
Do you ever feel like when you move from maybe one level of joy to the next, it's a form of satori, of sudden enlightenment?
Oh, it's all satori. It's all sudden enlightenment. I'm being a little facetious here, but we have this word sudden enlightenment in Zen. And rather than grasping for some experience, if you just do your dot practice, everybody will get sudden enlightenment, satori, just going out and digging in the backyard, because you're just doing it. And you're just noticing. You're noticing. You're feeling. You're not in your head. Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to ask you, do you think that if you're searching for that enjoyment, you have to be very vulnerable and to let go, like each and every moment, because, you know, we're trying to grasp so much for, let's say, joy, or sometimes we...
Yeah, don't try to let go too much. Because if you try to let go, what happens? Just this, rather than... So is this letting go? Is that letting go? I don't know. This is, what's his name? Uchiyama Roshi. Yeah. So don't... Just do the practice of just being present in your life and taking care of what you deeply want to take care of, which is on the path. You're on the path to manifesting what you really want to be, what you really want to do. But you're not doing it in a grasping way. You're doing it with an open-handed way. And then when you notice you're grasping, then you just notice you're grasping. It's the same hand. Rather than saying, I should be like this, if you're just like this and you just are with it, gradually it opens on its own. But you can't open it. You can't do it. Because you are the one that's holding it like this. But if you allow it, if you feel that you are more than this tiny little self, that you're larger, 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 then you can open it. How was that? Okay. Yes.
I just wanted to make a comment about wants in terms of recognizing our desires or our wants.
Uh-huh.
We need to actually look at that as wants versus needs.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you can want something and not get it, and it can cause you a great deal of unhappiness. But then the more subtle, less often recognized aspect of that is you can want something very much and get what you want. And that can often make you more miserable than not getting it.
Yeah, that's true.
So we really need to consider wants versus needs. And needs tend to be determining the things you need in order to follow as best you can your spiritual path.
Good for you. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
I'm
sorry. I didn't. What'd you, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I read an article by Susie Orman, who's a financial advisor.
Oh, yeah.
She said when you're planning your finances, assess if it's a want or a need.
Uh-huh.
If it's a want, walk away. If it's a need, go for it.
Oh, thank you.
I just read that last night, and that's exactly what she said.
Oh.
It was interesting to hear that in a totally different context.
Oh. Oh. There you go. Thank you. Jen.
Intentions as part of your practice? Do you use intention?
Oh, I definitely use intention. That's my path.
And how do you do that?
I check in with myself with how I want to manifest this next few years of my life or next few months. I'm pretty old. What's my intention? And you know, I have a specific intention in regard to being here and supporting people. That's my intention, and being with my grandkids and supporting them. Those are my two main intentions in my life at this point, just having turned 75. And when I get off course, I come back to, these are my intentions. I mean, they come from my heart. And they're mine. You know, everybody has a different intention. Don't use my intention. Find your intention.
Do you ever find that you have a longer list of intentions?
Oh, yeah, I have. Yeah, I have. And sometimes I do, but then I have to come back to what's priority for me. I mean, I am 75, but even when I was 45 or 35, what's priority for me? You know, what? And we do have priorities, and we do. And we have priorities based on superego, based on all the things we think we should be doing, but we have authentic priorities too. We all do. And I don't mean it's easy to sort them out. No, it takes practice. It's a path. Anybody else? Larry.
Yeah, I'm just thinking more about the exhilaration thing.
Uh huh.
When I dance sometimes, or when I used to ride a bicycle in traffic.
Yeah.
So often I would experience this kind of intense joy, which I think is exhilaration, but it doesn't sound like the exhilaration you're talking about. It's sort of a feeling of being present in the moment.
Yeah, so that sounds like situational joy. Remember the first level of joy I said was based on the situation. Oh, you're riding, you're feeling the wind, you're let go of your thoughts. That's wonderful. That's mudita. That's not paramudita. It's mudita, to use Sanskrit. Sorry, you guys, but, you know, I've been studying Buddhism for all these years, so I can't help it.
It's a feeling of being present, you know, sort of not...
Yeah, it's the dot. It's the dot right there on the bike, even though you got to get to a mile down to deliver whatever you're delivering.
Sort of being the flow.
Yeah.
Dancing too.
Yeah.